Okay, we didn't quite finish last week, and this is one of the longer entries of the Sefer HaChinuch and the Minchas Chinuch. So, we discussed last week some of the more technical aspects, whether there's one mitzvah here, whether there's two mitzvahs here, it's Lav Shebechlolos. The Torah says, don't eat the Korban Pesach raw or cooked with water, right? Rather, it must be eaten tzli'esh, roasted on fire. Okay? It doesn't just say tzli, it says tzli'esh. Okay, so we discussed last week a lot of the precautions that the Gemara takes to make sure that no water ever comes into any contact with the Korban Pesach in any way, not even in the inside of a wooden beam or something like that. Okay, and it has to be direct fire, not the heat of a red-hot metal spit either. Okay, so some of these things are what we say li'ikuva, that it could be a game-breaker. Some of these things will not. Now, to be sure, the halacha is that the only way cooking a Korban Pesach is actually a game breaker is if you cooked it from its raw state to what's called ma'achol ben drusai, which is a third or half finished, you know, cooked, however you want to put it. So the Minchas Chinuch starts the discussion actually by citing the Gemara in Psachim and the Rambam's Halacha in Perek Ches that says that the definition of raw, right? The definition of raw. Robbie, do you have the names to say now? You want to start off the share with the names? So the definition of raw is before it's a third or half cooked. When food is a third or a half cooked, you can call it, it's done. Since some people eat it that way, that's roasted. It's only a third roasted, that's roasted. For that person, it's roasted, so it removes itself from the status of being raw when we say we proved last week that that does not mean raw. That means cooked or roasted before it reaches that third or half stage. Okay, Robbie, you want to say the names? Robbie, you have to unmute yourself.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yitzchak Yosef ben Dina Yocheved. Mm-hmm. Yitzchak Lev ben Yosef. Avram Abba ben Shendo. Ruvain ben Malka. Ari Daniel ben Malka Gitta, Rachel Bas Lulu, Aaron ben Pesel Henna, Yaakov ben Chaya.
Okay, we're also learning from Shidduch for anyone. Okay, all right. So
I have two more.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Pinchas Yaakov ben Esther and Yaakov. Mendel ben Sarah.
Okay. It should be all for a foolish name.
All right.
So, with the Minchas Chinuch, he posits at the beginning, he says toward the end, he's not sure if this should be so, but he posits that the definition of Bishul in Hilchot Shabbos is consistent with our definition here. In other words, until you have cooked this thing a third or a half, let's go with a half for now. So it still has a tikkun, right? If you took the Korban Pesach, you slaughtered it, you brought it home to your hotel room, someplace in Yerushalayim, it doesn't have to be prepared and doesn't have to be eaten on Harabayas. It has to be slaughtered in Harabayas. It has to. But you're taking it home someplace, right? You're taking it home, tied with the Rosh Hashanah, Al-Kirbo, and you're going to prepare it someplace. So that preparation, if you put it right into a big cauldron with water for 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, so it still can be fixed until it reaches its halfway stage, because until it's cooked halfway, it's not called cooked. All right, but once it reaches that stage where it's called Moshel Mavushal B'mayim, says the Chinuch, then it's finished. It has no tikkun anymore.
Is that the same stage as cooking for Shabbos? If something is cooked more than halfway, it's
yes,
okay.
that is what he said. He suggests that. He says, I have no proof of that, but he thinks that that's the most plausible way, approach to take to this. Okay, because the Gemara just says what is considered na, and it gives a Persian word abarnayim. So we did that last week. This is what he says. He says a third or a half. And that's famous machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. We're gonna stick with a half for now. And so we're gonna just going to say that. If it's mamish raw, that's not in this parsha. We learned last week that if you eat a korban pesach raw, you're not violating the losase of al tochal mimenu na, but you are violating the asay of kiim tzliyesh. Okay.
When you say that it's halfway done, if you cook meat, the center may not be halfway done, but the ends may be halfway done. Does it have to be halfway all the way through and through, or good, any part of it is halfway?
Good question, because the Chinuch deals with that on page Mem Dalet. He says, Mishnei Tzedodim. Dafka benitzle kemacha ben drusai bishnei tzedodim. Okay, aval im nitzle mimacha ben drusai mitzad echad, lav klumhu. Has to be on both sides, on both points. It's that if it's cooked, and I mean, cooking takes it all. It's all in the water together. I think it gets just probably get cooked evenly. But roasted, it depends on one side sees the fire, the other side doesn't see the fire. So Robbie's question is dealt with here. It has to be through and through.
Rabbi, sorry to digress, but just a basic preparation question. Mm-hmm. So the prohibition against breaking bones, or like, was it butchered at some point? Clearly people were not eating an entire animal. So when are you allowed to cut it up? How was it actually prepared?
So that's the thing, is that it's not cut up. It's rosho al kra'ov al kirbo.
So they would bring it in. So you cook it that way, you roast it that way, and how do you serve it to people?
Well, you ever go to Papagayo's? They bring you the whole leg, and you just and they take it off from the leg. Now the fact is that there's sometimes between joints you can sever between joints, and there's cartilage there, and you're not breaking a bone.
Right.
But yeah, that's how the Korban Pesach was eaten. It was like, remember, it's a small animal. It's a few months old. It can't be more than a year old.
But the entire animal was in effect in the kitchen or whatever, and they were sort of taking slices off the animal.
Correct.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that, and that's coming up soon. Also, that's a separate mitzvah you're going to get. Okay. So that's if the Chinuch asked, what if you cooked it and then roasted it, right? If you cooked it and then roasted it, so it depends on how far you cooked it. If it was cooked less than Machol Ben Drusai, then Tzli will correct it because it's still not cooked. Okay, clear?
Yep.
All right, so but once it's past Machol Ben Drusai, it doesn't have any takana anymore. I remind you what we did last week, and then I'd like to go to see some material inside. I'd like to remind you of two things. One is that eating mamish raw meat, right, does not violate al tochal mimenu na. Na here does not mean raw. It means cooked up to, or even roasted. Adrava, even roasted. You could put it on the fire, but if you didn't have it on the fire long enough to be called Tzliyesh, then you're also violating the Torah because it's still not. right? So, but if it's mamash raw, that's not na. You didn't fulfill the asay of tliyesh, but you haven't violated na. And the chinuch told that this we read last week, page mem dalid towards the left side, towards the bottom. He says that eating doesn't violate the Torah, not because it's shelo kederach achila. You might have thought that eating raw meat can't violate the Torah because it's not violating the Torah at all. The nafkamina, of course, would be if you eat raw meat on Yom Kippur. Is it a violation of Yom Kippur? The answer the chinuch says is yes, because it's considered eating. You don't violate Yom Kippur by an act of eating that's not considered eating. Such as the food is not worthy, right? It's an achila gasa, you're eating too much, right? It has to be a regular general eating. So if
intravenous is okay?
It would certainly not violate the Torah.
Right.
Right. If someone needs to take a medication or an aspirin or something, I suspect that a suppository or something like that is definitely preferable to taking something to the mouth. But be careful, because if the person is a chole, even chole she'en bo sakona, then many poskim, because of the suffek, because suffek pikuach nefesh is also docha Shabbos and docha Yom Kippur, So let's not play any, taking the chances and playing the games here. A person should just, probably take it the regular way. Rav Chaim was very makel on these things. The story I heard was that a student asked him about fasting on Shiva Sofer Tammuz, and it was a very hot day, and he told him, you should fast, and the kid died. There was a kid in the yeshiva who died on a Shiva Sofer Tammuz, and he became very spooked on Yom Kippur for everything afterwards. And they said, why are you being so makel on Yom Kippur? Famous answer. He said, I'm not being makel on Yom Kippur, I'm being machmir in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh. So that's simple. And there are proofs all over Shas. I just saw a Gemara today at Daf Yudal Gecholin, happened to be up to, is, it says that if someone shechts meat for a sick person on Shabbos, so you feed the sick person on Shabbos, you have to obviously prepare it. That's the only food we have, right? So we shecht it, and then there's some meat sitting there. What are you going to do with it? So some of that meat, the question is, obviously you can't roast it on Shabbos for anybody but the chola, but what about just eating a piece of the meat raw? The meat was shechted, al piheter. So the Gemara entertains the idea of someone on Shabbos eating that meat raw, not waiting till after Shabbos, during Shabbos. Yeah, but you can't do anything with that meat. Right? Obviously, it has to be a pretty small piece because you might have to worry about salting also. You're not allowed to salt meat on Shabbos. Anyway, kamash malan, eating raw meat is considered kederach achila. It's not shelo kederach achila. Okay. All right, that's at the bottom of page Mem Dalid. I want to remind you also that you're not allowed to cook a Korban Pesach in apple juice. It would violate the Torah. But you are allowed to baste the Korban Pesach with oil or pomegranate juice or whatever else, barbecue juice.
Barbecue sauce, you can use that?
Yeah. Wow. You are allowed to baste the Korban Pesach as it's roasting. But because that's not, no one's going to say that's cooking, but you cannot touch the Korban Pesach with water while it's roasting.
I know that I guess honey is not allowed to come near Kutchim or something, or can you use honey on it?
Yes. So obviously, yeast, no, but honey is not to be brought into any Korban, but while it's being prepared, but you can add the honey to it afterwards, after it's on your plate.
Ah, so you couldn't, honey is the one thing you wouldn't be able to baste it
cannot,
with.
Right, you cannot, because it says in Parashas Tzav, no dvash, no se'or. Now there, the dvash does include
date honey or bee honey?
Date honey. It's meant to be date honey. So
not only if it went on Mizbeah?
Yeah, so this, when once you're roasting it, yeah, because you wrote, yeah, it's limited to Harabayas that you can't put the honey on. So when you're roasting the Korban Pesach, it's, you know, it's unusual because in the, you know, when, I mean, look, this is Kachim Kalim. So Kachim Kalim can be eaten anywhere within the precincts of Yerushalayim.
The barbecue sauce is what made me think of it, because a lot of barbecue sauce has honey in it.
I see.
Only in the South.
Yeah. Well, Aaron's from Memphis. Okay, so that is the it says in Parshas Tzav that you can't have add honey and yeast. We add badafka salt to our korbanos, which enhances taste. Honey and yeast masks the taste. Also, it's interesting that our first korban, the korban Pesach, has two things added to it that like counter honey and yeast. The matzahs connected the yeast, and the merorim connected the honey. So as if though, and honey and yeast were very popular additions to animal sacrifice in the ancient Near East. We see in the Akkadian and the Druidic, a lot of ancient descriptions that they love to add their honey and their yeast. So it's as if though the Torah is like reacting to that and saying they're doing it, so it becomes like chukos agoyim, I don't want you doing it. Okay. All right. So let's now just to sweeten the pot on the connection to Shulchan Shabbos, the Chinuch suggests that if you do put in a Korban Pesach before it's fully roasted in a pot that's a klisheni of hot water, you don't violate the Torah. Because sof klisheni ain't a mevashel. It's a Gemara in Chulin. What do we mean? A kli rishon is a pot of hot water that's on the fire. If you remove that pot from the fire, it's still a kli rishon. But if you pour from that pot into another pot, that pot becomes a kli sheni. You may know some of these halachos regarding bishul on Shabbos, making tea on Shabbos, for instance. So if you pour that water into a second pot and then dip the Korban Pesach in that, then it does not violate the Torah because only a kli rishon cooks for these purposes.
Okay. You still have the asay tzli'esh problem.
Correct. Yeah. Okay, let's start to read now a little bit.
Let me ask you, in today's time we have like hot pots, there's no flame. Does it have to be with a flame, or if it's hot, you know, what happens if you had it on
the
stove?
The heating element is the flame for this, right, Rabbi?
What?
The heating element.
So in Hilchot Shabbos, let's just compare it. You know, you're not allowed to have the flame in view while you're warming up the food or whatever it is. Because we're afraid that if you see the flame, that you may be what's called mechata begicholim. You may move around the coals, so that's why we put up a blech. Now the blech, we don't cook with coals anymore, but we do have a handle, you know. So preferably that handle should be covered or somehow manipulated where you're not likely to just make it higher or lower, just forgetting that it's Shabbos. So you don't want to ever see the flame.
No, but let's say like a crock pot. Today they have all these different, you know.
Right, so the crock pot looks like it's a cover. The metal part of the crock pot is your blech.
I think what Robbie's asking is like the urn. Why is that a kli rishon? And I think the answer is because the heating element is, for purposes of the urn, the fire, no?
Oh yeah, no doubt. Yeah, and it gets boiling hot.
Right. There it doesn't have to be like a literal flame.
Yeah, there's still most of our urns don't have an element where you can heat it up and make it hotter. But the crock pot does. So what some people do is they just put a piece of aluminum foil on top of the knob that says low, high, off, you know, something like that. But I do believe I was once in Rav Schechter's house in Tannersville, and he actually puts aluminum foil in between the crock pot and the heating element. I'll tell you, I heard that can get dangerous, I'm just saying that I think when I see this, I think from when beginning Corona, when the people couldn't tovel something, I don't know, whatever it is, but yes, right, to answer Robbie's question is that the metal plate on your warmer, on your, you know, your oven drawer or whatever it is, the metal plate can act like a blech. You don't see the actual heating element.
Right? Well, that's what I'm saying. If you don't see it, so then it's not a flame.
Yeah. Okay. So you're right. So if you warm the Korban Pesach in the heating drawer, you may not be violating Tochal Mimenu Nah, but you are not fulfilling Sliyesh. That's for sure. Okay. All right. So one final thing before we read inside, which I'd like to do shortly, is that the Chinuch says that if you eat the Korban Pesach raw or cooked before the nighttime starts or after the nighttime is over,
okay,
you have not violated the Torah. Okay, this is a sugya in the Seches Tumura, where if you recall, the Gemara discusses when you violate the Torah, is it efficacious? You know, does it work? Right, suffice it to say that the Gemara gives dozens of cases, and it says sometimes yes and sometimes no. If a man gives his sister kesef kiddushin and says harayt mekadeshesli, she doesn't need a get; he hasn't accomplished anything. But if a kohen gives a grusha a ring and says that she is considered married to him, even though they violated the Torah, even Rabbi Akiva agrees with that. So, in our case...
Question. The children of such a marriage, are they allowed to marry a Kohen?
No. No.
Okay.
No. So...
Why not? Because it's a Jewish girl.
It says they would be called a halal, and the Torah doesn't allow it.
Oh.
Okay. But a non-Kohen may marry the child. Okay, so that the only time where the violation of eating this Korban Pesach in the wrong prepared way is at a time where other people can fulfill the mitzvah of Pesach. If you eat it before the Zman or after the Zman, you may have a separate problem, right? Especially after the Zman, because it's called Nosar at that time, right? It's a Chiv Kares. But as far as violating the Korban Pesach, it's only at a time where it's where everything else about it is acceptable. Okay? That's a big sugya in Maseches Me'ila. In order to violate Me'ila, everything else about the Korban has to be on the up and up. You get it? To be violating the sanctity of the Korban, it has to be a fully sanctified Korban. If after I broke the bone of the Korban Pesach, I found out that the Korban Pesach was actually Tamei, so I didn't get an Avera for that, because I didn't break the bones of a Korban Pesach. You get it? It's Tamei. It doesn't behave like a Korban Pesach. Okay? So too, the only time where we get a violation for eating the Korban Pesach raw or cooked or anything but Sliyesh is at a time where I could and should be eating it to fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, what I'd like to do is touch upon number six. Do you see number six? It's on page. Well, I didn't put page numbers, but it's on Daf Mem Zayin.
Where I don't have, I'm just looking at the actual sefer. Where are you in Mem Zayin?
Mem Zayin, it didn't come in with a number.
It did. I just have the sefer open because I really get to use the sefer and I like to use it.
Oh, okay. So it starts off with the words "Mevor Sham Ezo Gedima Kulas." Gedima Kulas and Daf Ayin Dalid.
I got it down at the bottom right.
Great. Okay.
Yep.
So So Gedima Kulas is the way it literally means helmeted kid. It means that's the way that Todos Yishromi, remember, I think we mentioned him last time.
Right.
He's the one who even after the Chorban Beis Hamikdash ate the Korban Pesach, you know, roasted and, you know, on a spit with the hands like this and the feet. Amazing. So, and it shows that it's closer to the Sfardim, but closer to that, you know, to such a minhag. But okay. So he says that the Gedim Kulos, the Osel Echol Bizman Azeh, Kol Shet Solo Kulo Ke'echod. So if it has to all be made as one. Now that's Aaron, your question was Bizman HaMikdash. We're talking here after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed. There was such a minute to do it, but the Gemara concludes that one should not be doing this so as not to render an impression that we're eating kachim bachutz. Ashkenazim have taken it to such an extreme. What?
Is Gedima Kula shorthand for something that is prepared after the Beis HaMikdash in the way that it was prepared during the Beis HaMikdash, basically? Or is it this helmeted thing that happens to look like?
Yes. That, I think it's the second one.
Okay.
The word lekales, is in the Haggadah, and it's also in the in our Shacharis, right before Yishtabach, right?
Right.
So in the Barbanel's Haggadah, he suggests that we should remove the word ulekales, and he suggests we should remove it from Shacharis because it is in the Tanakh, keles ulcherpa. Keles is to curse, not to praise. Right? It's in our davening, but I know, ulaleo kales, no doubt that's what it means there. And there are some biblical words that mean itself and its opposite. There are some words like that. Right? But, okay, I'm just saying, but I don't think that anyone says that the word gedima kulas is connected to that word. Okay. So now, what I'd like to do is go to the next page, Daf Mem Ches, to number 7. This is a theme that you find very, very often in the Sefer Chinuch to some great, great lumdus. He comes to an interesting conclusion, not in this mitzvah yet. It's going to be coming up shortly, but it's on the din of Chatzishir. Chatzi zayis no, b'chatzi zayis mavushal. What do you think? If you eat half of a shear not fully roasted, it's just roasted for 10 minutes, not even up to kamacha ben drusai, and half a zayis of mavushal, b'mayim, of cooked in water. So together you have a full zayis of non-tzli meat. So it looks that you're violating the aseh. But everybody knows that you don't violate the los aseh. Right? Because you don't have a full kezayis of shem echot. You know what I mean by shem echot? Of one violation. The question, though, is that, you know, I think this did come up when we talked about Gira Noshe, is that the Torah, it's at the end of Maseches Yuma, that there's something called Chatzi Shir Asur Min HaTorah. The Chok is Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish, that if I eat half a kezayis of pork, I violate the Torah. Of course I violate the Torah. The Torah says don't eat pork. Ah, but wait a second, be careful. Eat is defined by a kezayis. Before a kezayis, you haven't eaten. Remember your benchmark, the Rabbaz's tshuva about a man who was so ill that he was full on a half a kezayis, but he still told him you don't bench. Because while it's true that you have committed yourself to visavata, you have not committed yourself to v'achalta. Right? You're full, but you didn't eat. Whatever makes you full, does that mean that if you have one raisin and a hypnotist convinces you that you're full, that you have to bench? Whoever said such a thing?
Well, you wouldn't bench on a raisin anyway.
But wouldn't it be a kazaitz?
Yes, so that's the point.
A kazaitz, don't you... I mean, you make a bracha, but I guess you're not obligated to bench?
Well, the Torah says after you eat and after you're satiated, then bench.
So why, I mean, if you have to really do both, I mean, very few people are really satiated after a kazayas.
No, of course not. I said,
but why do we have to bench?
If we have to bench after?
I think if it's a kazayas of bread, you have to bench.
But I'm saying you're not satiated by it.
Even if you're not.
If Vesavata is true but not Vachalta, why is Vachalta true but not Vesavata? Why do we have to bench that?
I thought you bench because you don't die.
Be finished, guys. Please. The Gemara in Brachas actually uses this as the reason why God favors.
Why God loves us, right.
So the Doraisa, you have to bench at the Kibetz. That's already something. But a kazayas.
But that's also not really v'savata. I mean, you eat an egg. I mean, especially, you know, you're hungry, you need an egg. You're not, whatever. Okay.
If it defines, it's a term of art, though, at some point. It has a definition.
And so the when the person benches at the kazayas, he's making, you know, he's saying, God, whatever you give me is satisfactory. That's what the Gemara says, that a katan, the 10-year-old katan, can fulfill his father's obligation if the father only ate a kazayas and the katan is full, because the father is midrabanan and the child is midrabanan. Tosfos has a lot of questions on that Gemara, but I'm just pointing out that adarabba, you're right. If you eat a kazayas, no one in the world is full. But with the fact that we say we're full, it's not just okay, God, I want to make myself chayav to bench, but I'm saying, God, whatever you give me, I'm satisfied. So that's the Gemara that in Brachas. But now at a half a kazayas, when I eat a half a kazayas of pork, certainly I have eaten, right? But I have not eaten according to the halacha, according to the Torah's definition. But there's another opinion that says chatzi shir asim in the Torah that says you're right. You don't get malchus. You're not punished for eating a half a kazayas, but you're still in violation of the Torah. Don't tell me that this is not a violation of the Torah. Okay, the big sugya on this is in Maseches Shavuos. What is this? Why is this impact on Shavuos?
Because if you make a shavua about eating, have you violated it if you only eat half a kazayas?
Right, of course, because if I say I won't eat this roll, okay, so if I eat a part of the roll, I haven't violated my oath yet. I have to eat the whole roll. Right? If I say I won't eat any part of this roll, then yeah, I get that. If I say I won't eat at all, what happens if I eat dust? Right? What happens if I eat in achila gasa? You know, all these kind of questions are dealt with in the chinuch all over his book, in any mitzvah that says don't eat something. So here is where he discusses the chatzizayis. Here it's actually interesting here because the Torah lists two things you shouldn't eat, right? One is right? It's touch the fire, but not long enough to be considered sli. And two, bashel mevushal b'mayim. Why not? Maybe we can say that half a gazayas of this one, half a gazayas of that one, can possibly mitzaref. No.
Can you translate?
Mitzaref means to join, to
right. Aggregate.
To make an aggregate of an achila, because together they make up a kazayas. So I mush them together, and now I have a kazayas of non-tzli carbon pesach. So,
right, but you'd have to bench.
There isn't a kazayas
together.
All right. Now, what Rabbi just mentioned is actually a medrash in Rus Rabbah. I just happened to have run into this today because of connected to something else I was writing. But the Medrash says that there were three people in Tanakh that had they known that the Bible would record what they were doing, they would have made a greater effort than the one they actually put in.
Right. Reuven.
Reuven in last week's parsha. He would have took Yosef on his shoulders to take him home had he known that the Bible recorded it.
Aaron greeting Moshe?
Correct. Aaron, if he knew that the Torah would record his greetings and how happy he was, he would have come with a band or something. And the third is, he sort of gave it away by saying where it is.
With Boaz and...
Right, it's Rus Rabbah. That's the source of it. Rus Rabbah happens to be one of the oldest Midrashim we have. So Rus Rabbah says that had Boaz known that the Tanakh would record how much he gave her, he would have given him more than a pinch. You know, he gave him a yitzvot. You know, it's a pinch. It's seven. It's like tongs. So he would have behaved differently. So the Midrash asks, why did he give her so little? So it says, remember, she's been living in famine for 10 years. So Mistama, her stomach shriveled, and he wanted to test her since she was a recent Gioris. He wanted to test her to see if she was makbid in mitzvahs, whether she would bench or not. This is Batispa Batosa, right? He gave her so little and she was full. So the minchas, the sefer achinuch, the mitzvah benching in Dvarim actually brings down this medrash in Rus Rabbah. And he quotes some Rishonim who hold that that's what Rabbi just said, is that if you're, and Camelia hinted at it before, about how much you have to eat in order to bench. It has to be a kezias of dagon. It has to be a kezias of the bread. But there is a daya that if you eat a kezias of apples, you're full from apples, not a kezias, because that's not the...
It's like the shita of Rabbi Gamliel or...
Yeah.
Anything on...
But we don't ask him like that, do we?
I mean, no. No.
But if you were to eat a real suda that didn't have bread, like you had meat and potatoes and vegetables and salad and all of that, you could bench over that, right? Huge meal, but not bread.
You have to have gun, though. It has to be grain.
Okay, what about if you have wine with it?
That would be Rabbi Gamliel would say, yes, you bench on that, but we don't pass in that way.
In the time of the Gemara, they would bench over an onion if they made a meal out of it.
Well, if they were full from it.
Yeah.
So that's, but we don't pass in that. You know, there's normative halacha that takes all these Gemaras and it sifts through them and it sees how we know what's normative practice.
So are you saying if I made a mochi and I had less than a kazayit of bread and I was not full from my meal, I wouldn't have to bench?
You're getting into a tricky area here because I don't want to say that it's like a bracha l'batola, but if someone just takes a mamash, a morsel of bread, no, just it makes a tiny little bit, you know, we can quibble about what constitutes a kezias and whether, you know, since bread is made with some other things, right? There's eggs, there's other things in it. It has to be a kezias of actual grain. Adarabba. And I'll tell you something even more important is that in order to make the bracha al netilas yadayim before eating bread, you have to eat more than a kezias. Right? Whether it's a kibetzah or a tuzaisim, but you look in the sfarim and you'll see these brachas sfarim. It says, you know, eat this much if you want to make an al netilas yadayim. But the normative practice though is, it's, okay, if I'm not worried, I'm not going to eat that much bread, so I'm going to wash my hands, but I won't make a bracha. No one does that. People make a bracha on their hands, but it's a complicated halacha, and it's not. I don't want to get off on too much.
Is there a time frame in which you have to eat the kezias? If you could just have a little bite with hamotzi and then you have a little more during the meal?
Once you've reached the threshold of one kezias kedei achilas pras, you just shouldn't go 72 minutes without eating after that.
But you should have a kezias for the hamotzi.
Yes, preferably, yes. Yes,
with the bracha, right? I mean, because some people take a little piece of challah or whatever.
Some have the minhag of not talking. They won't start talking until they've eaten that kezias. They want to make sure they dispatch of that kezias right when they make the motzi, and then you can do what you want.
Last thing on this, but if you were to go to like a wedding smorgasbord and you were to have an enormous amount of food but no bread, you would not bench for that?
That's amazing. Yeah, I know. It's always been a problem at Chinese restaurants because Chinese restaurants tend not to serve you bread. Right? You're eating all this stuff. So I chow down. I'm more on the, you can bench on chow mein noodles and the.
Okay. So in other words, there's
some doggone. Right. This is doggone. Then you have to wash your hands for it.
Wow.
It's called the Kovea Sudan, those things.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like pizza.
Pizza, yeah,
but rice isn't enough.
No, that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says yes, but we don't pass in that way. Normative halacha does not consider rice. The Gemara and Psachim, the Daf just talked about it. No,
that it's so if you go crazy at the sushi station, that's not enough.
Right.
It's but right back to your original question about eating a half a gazayas of a bushel, and half a gazayas of na. Would that be?
So here, this is number where I put my number 7. Do you see it on page Mem? It's Daf Mem Chest, where I wrote the number 7. Okay. All right, so he says, Unadas, Rambam, Ramban, Zal, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the opinion of the Rambam to count only one mitzvah here. And then he says afterwards that the Ramban zichron levracha manos on shnei lavin. So the nafkamina would be, is that if this is one lav, then it's possible to say, this is, ends up as a chumrah, that a half a kezias of na and a half a kezias of boshel mevushal b'mayim can mitzvah. It's one mitzvah, it's one shame. Unroasted Korban Pesach. Any unroasted Korban Pesach can join together to make a kezias to violate the Torah. But if you hold that these are two separate mitzvahs, as the Ramban does, he counts it two separate of the 613 mitzvahs, then he thinks that they will not mitzvah because it's two different shemos, it's two different averos, two different names. And each one has to have its own kezias, as opposed to the Rambam, who says unroasted Korban Pesach can mitztarif. Okay, I would like to go into number 8 now. Okay, let's look at number 8. It's the last page, Daf Mem Tes. And he says, Ayein Menachos Peregimel. You see it? You see Peregimel, Perekom, Kol Menachos, Nun Gimel Amal Aleph.
Yeah. The Maksha Sham?
Yeah. Okay, so now there's also a mitzvah that you're not allowed to have any chametz in any mincha, except the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos and the Korban Toda. But all any other mincha that is allowed to become chametz violates the Torah. Okay? So he wonders, here is the question. So it's something that he actually raised earlier, and these are all quite theoretical, but things that will passel the Korban Pesach, right? Because he wonders, because he said already before that if you cook the Korban Pesach, and you pass the stage of Macho Ben Jerusai, let's call it a half-cooked, right? It doesn't have any tzakana. You're finished. You registered for this. You lost it. You can't, you have to go to make a Pesach Sheni now.
Right? You have to burn that, by the way? What do you do with that?
Yeah, that has to, yes. It has to be burned before the morning, right? But if you started cooking it and you say, oh, what am I doing? It's crazy. And you take it out before it's Machol Ben Drusai, you can still fix it by putting it in the, on the spit. So then he discusses some other psulim. For instance, the Torah says, Lo tishchat al chameit dam zivchi. You're not allowed to slaughter the Korban Pesach while owning chametz. In fact, that's how we derive that you have to get rid of chametz on Erev Pesach. That's one of the limudim. Ach is another. Ach b'yom rishon. Ach, the Gemara says, is the, cuts the day in half. Another limud is lo tochal olav chametz. Right? Don't eat chametz while the Korban Pesach is offered. So there are various limudim. And this limud says, lo tishchat al chametz dam zivchi. So what happens if someone did offer the Korban Pesach at 2 in the afternoon on Erev Pesach, and he had a house full of chametz? He didn't sell any of it. He still owned it. All right, when he gets back, he sees it there, he's going to, oh, what did I do? And he's going to get rid of it, he's going to burn it, he's going to destroy it. He's a firm Jew, he knows what he has to do, but he may have messed up.
Is it in Hefker?
So that's a famous din. I'm glad Zachary Prensky just came on, because I've asked him this question before in the daf. Zach, what are two things that the Gemara says you own enough to be in violation of it, but you don't own enough to actually derive any benefit from it?
Yes.
Well, obviously, chametz over Pesach is the easy one.
Right, so you keep
the boar
b'shut sarabim. Correct. Excellent. Boar b'shut sarabim. If you take a pit in the public sphere, you can't own that thing. You can't just acquire something in the public. But you own it enough, the Gemara says in Baba Kama, to be responsible for any damages it causes. So too, on Chol HaMoed Pesach, if a man gives a woman $1,000 worth of chametz and says, "Harayet mukadeshesli b'chametz zu k'das Moshe b'Yisrael," she is not even a chash. She's not married to him because he hasn't given her anything. She now has a value of $1,000 in her hand, and if she actually wanted to sell it, she could get money for it. And it's important to remember that in Maseches Kiddushin, chametz does not tofes its damim. If someone does sell chametz during Pesach, that what it's sold for is mutter. You know what I'm saying? If a man sells $1,000 worth of chametz during Pesach, and with that money buys a ring, and with that ring he's mekadesh her, she is mekudeshes, right?
Right.
So chametz is not tofes its damim, but it doesn't have any value to the person. That's always your benchmark, and you mekadesh a woman with it. And the fact is that even though he can't own the chametz, he owns it just enough to be in violation of Bayer Rabbi Amatze. Okay? So here's what the Sefer Chinuch, the Minchas Chinuch asks. He posits that if someone did shecht the Korban Pesach while owning chametz, the Korban Pesach is still kosher, and he can still eat it that night and fulfill his obligation. But if he cooked the Korban Pesach in a pot of water till it got to be Machol Ben Drusai, and then he takes it out and he wants to now roast it, and it looks just the same, no one knows the difference. No, that's a psul. You're not getting any credit for eating the Korban Pesach. So he says, what's the difference? Both of them violated a lo saseh connected to the Korban Pesach, right? So why does he think that? He says, "Ushchitas haPesach halachametz lo nechshav din haMitzvah. Al korchach tzarich lamar daasin shetzivsa Torah etzal haMitzvah zeh haBedin haMitzvah shetaseh haMitzvah al toar kach." What he's saying in some fancy words. Let me explain it maybe in terms of another case.
Sure. One is like the chaptan, one is the gavra. No,
exactly. If someone Nebuch lost his brother. He hears his brother passed away on Shabbos. And he's so distraught that he starts ripping his jacket. And someone says, no, you can't do that on Shabbos. He goes, well, I'm destroying it. Mekalkel is mutter on Shabbos. It's not chayav on Shabbos. And I can't help myself. I'm going to rip it. And the guy says, no. What you're doing is actually a tikkun. Ha-korei b'chamoso, ha-korei al-meso is actually a positive act. It's not a kilkul. And they get into all this discussion, the guy loses control and he rips it on Shabbos. Right? Okay, so look, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, he's not going to get Malkus, he has to bring a Chatas Shmeina when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. But maybe not, maybe he did it amazing. But the point is that he's HaKorea B'Chamoso, HaKorea Meso Chayav. Right? If he did it B'Shogeg, he has to bring a Korban. But here's the question. When Shabbos is over and he's preparing for the funeral, and he meets his siblings and they're all cutting their kriya, he Is he Yotze already?
Let's do it again.
What do you think?
No. Yes, he's Yotze already.
He is. He is. So, but it's okay. Keep that in your back pocket. Then the Gemara gives another case and it says that someone wants to do Kriya. Someone hears his brother died, or he's in the presence of someone who died, in the presence of a person who died, he's supposed to do Kriya also, even if it's not a relative. And by the way, it's limited to a Jewish person. But if the person is in the presence of someone who died, and he looks at the suit, oh my goodness, I'm wearing my $4,000 Armani suit. And he doesn't want to do Kriya on that suit. So what does he do? He takes off his jacket. He steals his friend's jacket. That's a $30 suit, $30 jacket, or a cheap little something. And he says, "I'll cut Kriya on this." Man, I'll he's sensitive to the laws of Kriya, but not so much to the laws of Geneva. And he says, "I'll make good on it. Don't worry, I'll buy him two jackets like this. I just don't want to, I don't want to cut this suit." So, what do you think on that one, Robbie?
I think that he's not. If you stole something, then you cannot be. You can't.
Okay,
can't
so Robbie is right on both of these. Can you tell me the difference?
Well, when you have a stolen object, it's not yours. Number one. So how you be? You stole it.
Yeah, but they're both a mitzvah bab avera. Why? What makes this avera different than that avera? They're both a mitzvah that comes through an avera.
No, but so one is an
avera. Aaron already said the svara, right? We said the
stolen jacket is the jacket's not your jacket.
That's what I said.
It's not yours.
Right.
And it's in the goof of the thing that needs the kriya, it's a chefza shel iser, it's a chefza shel avera. The avera was done in the thing that needs the kriya. So, but when I did the kriya on Shabbos, well, the kriya is a richtige kriya. It just happens to be a 24-hour period where I shouldn't be doing this. The jacket doesn't know about that. The laws of kriya don't know about that.
Right. Isn't there a standing in this thing on
a day called Shabbos?
Isn't there a Perek in Mishnah called Lulav HaGuzzel that discusses this, right? It's the Chefza Shel Mitzvah has to be yours.
Yeah. The third Perek in Sukkah, yeah. This particular two cases is in the Gemara in Perek HaOreg in Masechet Shabbos. It talks about HaKorea B'Chamaso, Korea Al-Meso. So now I think we can apply this difference to our case. Because in the case of the cooking of the Korban Pesach, in the case of where he imamish did something to the goof of the Chefza Shel Mitzvah, so that weakens it and it actually spoils it to the point of making it possible to ever be used to fulfill the dinim of Korban Pesach. But when I shecht on 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the shecht of Korban Pesach while I still own chametz, it's true, I did Navera, my mitzvah, the second I performed my mitzvah, it simultaneously committed an avera because I shechted the Korban Pesach while owning chametz, right? And by the way, the way the Gemara understands it, you have to get rid of the chametz. You're violating the Torah not when you offer a Korban Pesach, but when you could offer a Korban Pesach. Okay, the Gemara insists, by the way, that Hamakadesh, a man who gives chametz to a woman on Erev Pesach already after Chatzos is not mikudeshes. Remember the Gemara's lashon is ein lo beis mechush. It's not even a shemetz. It's not even a chash that she's mikudeshes by because he gave her this chametz on Erev Pesach.
But by the way, if the Korban Pesach gets some chametz on it. What's the, you said the guy still has chametz, he puts a little breadcrumbs or something on it.
I would just say treat that like anything else where if something usher falls on something mutter, where you, if it depends on how hot it is, you have to might cut away that piece, you might have to, that's actually what you have to do, the Gemara says, if while the Korban Pesach is on its spit, some water got on it. You have to take a knife there quickly and cut that piece away. Right? It doesn't destroy the whole Korban Pesach.
Can you eat that piece?
No.
How are you mekayim the law of lo tishchal dam sivri? Does he have to bring a carbon, or he gets malchus? What do you do about that?
If someone shechts the carbon, or is it registered for a carbon pesach while he still owns chametz?
Yes.
It's interesting because it would be a lav shein bo maisa. I don't think there's malchus for such a thing.
Okay.
He's not doing anything.
Well, he's shechting while he owns chametz.
Well, right. I mean, yeah, usually the shechita was performed by a you know, the kohen.
Okay, but that's considered a lav shein bo maisa.
Yeah.
Because it's at his status while he's doing it.
If the Easter is shechita at the time on chametz, why do we care what he does subsequently with it? What does it make whether he's committed the violation at that particular moment when the shechita took place? What does it make whether it boiled it or
there's just wanted to point out that it doesn't ruin anything for the carbon pesach.
Right. And acknowledging that, my question is, so what happens to the lav? And
he
sounds like
kapara that coming Yom Kippur. I don't know yet.
Okay.
What happens if he doesn't know? Like today, we would like give a rabbi our thing to sell it. What happens if we find out later the rabbi didn't sell it on time, or he sold it later? You know.
That's an issue. Yeah.
It couldn't happen.
You know.
It doesn't matter because you make the bracha and hefker.
Yeah, that's why when you used to make it hefker, you would do bittel. I'm sure everyone did that too.
I mean, everything is like triple protected.
Yeah, of course. We cover it all. We cover our bases. All right, Shabbat, that's it. We finished number mitzvah 7. And again, my fastest hour of the week, Baruch Hashem.
That was really fast.
Mine too. Yeah, it goes very fast.
Okay.
What's next, Rabbi? What's next?
Next mitzvah is mitzvah number 8, which is Abraham and Shem Mayim, Kim Slei, Shal Kibbo Kibbo. It's also on Carbon Pesach, and I already started preparing it. It's escaping me for the moment. Here's the Lukrov Kirpo, mitzvah number 8.
Oh, Shlo Lahosir Mibasar
Pesach. Oh, yes. No, not to let it go past the morning. Yes.
Okay.
Sure. So next week we're going to, it's going to be a very nice, it's going to be like a Lav Shein Bo Maisa kind of thing. Because leaving it no sar, you didn't do anything. They just let it the time pass. So it's going to be some interesting. Plus, we have to of course do the machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Loza ben Azaria about when you can no longer eat the Korban Pesach. Everybody agrees it becomes no sar in the morning. The question is when can you no longer eat it? Okay.